What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Friday edition of The Call Up, and we're just going to be doing some headlines here because we've got plenty to catch up on across the minor leagues, including Christian Scott's big league debut, which we've been waiting for. Very pumped on that. Several big time performers, players that are just red hot at the upper levels. Then a couple other arms that we wanted to discuss as well. A couple updates on the schedule, because we did promise a couple things this week. We'll fill you in on that. But Jack, you're coming in from Indy right now from the ballpark. Any intrigue ball game wise today? I mean, there's always intrigue at Victory Field, but do we have any prospect intrigue?
Nick Gonzalez is killing the ball still. Dude's hitting like 374, I think, as it stands right now. And I know that he's exhausted his prospect intrigue, or at least his prospect status. But man, like, he's still, what, 24 years old? And he's been one of the best hitters in AAA to this point. I think he's second in hits behind Kobe Mayo, who we're going to talk about. So yeah. Nicky G is lighting the world on fire. And that's a guy like when he comes back up, you're going to see a way better version of Nick Gonzalez than what you saw at the big league level in 2023. And then you got Aurelvis Martinez, your king in mind, Damiano Palmigiani. And Andrew Bash on the hill against, how about this, Willy Peralta opening a bullpen game.
I love it. He's still going. That guy's going to pitch as long as anybody lets him pitch.
I think so. And the Pirates are letting him pitch right now.
I love it. I love it. And also, we're going to talk a little bit about the Max Meyer situation that I think is really unique as we're recording this, getting, you know, racked pretty good in AAA. But I have some thoughts on that and how the Marlins have kind of handled that and why I think the AAA numbers should not really matter to you very much. A little bit on AJ Smith Shaver, who's been really hot on the mound. And then I want to talk about Tink Hentz, who it was one of my favorite starts that I've watched in a little bit.
Yeah,
we were going to have Christian Scott on the show this week. That was the plan. And I think we were joking before, like something much better for his career happened, which was his big league debut. But that was the exciting interview that we had teased. And it makes sense that we're not able to get him on now because he's busy going to the big league. So congratulations to him. Hopefully we can circle back at some point when he's a little bit more settled in up there and finally get him on. But I think he'll be settled in relatively quickly because I do think that Christian Scott has the stuff and the command to get up there and stay. I'm glad the Mets made this decision. You know, they started hot. They've cooled a little bit. But, you know, I think they're seeing that, hey, this isn't a bad team. This isn't a rebuild year. And if you add Christian Scott to that rotation, especially with Senga coming back later, I think that really adds not only just talent overall, but upside as well, because they were plugging in, you know, some guys that, you know, with all due respect, you know what you're getting. And I think with Christian Scott, the unknown on the upper echelon is what can make a difference for a team that's looking like a 500 ball club. These are the little things that could get you a little bit over that hump and keep you in the wild card hunt. And I think Scott could easily do that. It'll be interesting to see how they manage his innings. We'll talk about, you know, that whole outlook, but the Mets just got better.
Yeah, for sure. And I like the point that you make with the unknown being exciting for them and the unknown possibly elevating their rotation. The known also elevates their rotation. The known was already big league caliber, and it was just a matter of time. So you get the known, which is floor of five, and you can elevate from there, which is awesome. And right now he does look like floor of five. I know the homer bug was getting to him a little bit early in the year, but he's going to strike out dudes. He's not going to walk dudes. And that is what you want from a starting pitcher in 2024, especially when the Mets bullpen, frankly, has been as good as it has. Reed Garrett is throwing like one of the better relievers in all of baseball. And then you've got that guy, Edwin Diaz, in the back of it, too. So like
Ottavino. Ottavino's been unreal.
I mean, dude, like the Mets, we talked about it on the Just Baseball show. They've fallen backwards into a better year than last year when they already labeled it as a bridge year and a see what we got year. And I love that. Are you sure that not coming on this show and going to the big leagues is better for Christian Scott's career? Shout out Evan Stockton in Syracuse, who was coordinating all that with us. And I know you shot him a DM, and it's like, oh, no wonder he didn't answer the DM.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, it's just one of those things where when you have that opportunity, like, I think everything just goes to the wayside. Yeah. We'll circle back when he settles in.
Easy.
I'm excited to talk to him, though, because there's so many questions that I have about the arsenal and just the adjustments that he's made. And it's been really cool to just see how he's kind of adapted as a pitcher to be one of the best strikeout to walk guys in the minor leagues last year, but also recognize, hey, you know, if I want to succeed at, you know, to the most of my ability at the big league level, I'm going to need to adjust this arsenal. I can't be a fastball changeup guy with a slider that is just eh. I need to find a slider that's going to be better for me, and I'm going to need to be able to use that. And what's been fascinating is not only does he find a better slider and actually has two variations now that are still different from what we saw last year, one more of a true sweeper, one harder with closer to two plane break. He's actually had more confidence in those sliders than he has in his changeup this year, which is unreal because his changeup was consistently playing as a plus pitch last year. Changeup has actually been a little bit spotty for him. I've been noticing a lot of the guys that are throwing in cold weather, you know, climates, specifically changeups have not been there. We're talking about Jobe. I could pull up a couple different pitchers that had a good changeup last year. Haven't had it in the early going. It's a little bit of I'm guessing, but I would venture to say that I think there's a correlation there across the board. And when you throw that changeup all year last year with dominance, I'm already seeing it start to come back for him. If he has that pitch to the degree that he had it last year, dude, on top of the slider that he has now and the fastball and the characteristics that it has, he's got the floor of a back end arm, but this guy could be a high end three and give you flashes of maybe even more than that when it's all clicking.
Weather absolutely played a factor. Changeup is a feel pitch. Fastball and slider, some elements of throwing those are feel oriented, but a changeup is entirely a feel pitch. And a fastball slider, you just rip him as hard as you can and see what happens. So like, as the weather gets warmer, that feel is going to be better. When it's cold in Syracuse, New York, you can't feel the tip of your fingers as well as when it's warm in Queens. So yeah, I would assume like, if he throws on a nice day, that changeup's going to be a weapon in his major league debut. And I think he's throwing inside in Tampa, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, and I'm sure he's going to have a ton of family there. South Florida kid, not too far of a drive. So that's going to be awesome. And I haven't been this excited for a debut in a little bit just because of, again, the adaptation and just the clear position for him to not only grab a spot in the Mets rotation now, a team that I think will be very competitive next year, and he could be a fixture in that rotation, but just also seeing the ascent and just kind of seeing the way that he has turned himself into the pitcher that he is and just continuing to adjust. And the old college reliever that ends up getting an opportunity to start in the pros and ends up being way better than he ever was in college. I always love those stories. And that's why you draft stuff and athleticism and mechanics, you know, a little bit more than just the numbers a lot of times in college. I think Christian Scott's just another great example of that. So you mentioned the long ball, and he's going to head to the big leagues having already surrendered 7 home runs. And that is something to watch. And we talked about that through the first few starts where he gave up a pair of home runs, and he's actually given up a home run in every single outing so far this year. I think it's almost a level of being in the zone too much sometimes. And, you know, I think when you saw what he was doing in Double A last year, he could erase hitters' counts with the fastball because it's hard, you know, in the mid 90s with unique characteristics. He's getting a lot of whiff. Also, he would just throw, you know, the slider when he was behind, and it could be a get me over or a changeup, you know, when he was behind, and guys would just take it or not put a good swing on it. Now, you're not going to be able to get away with that. 2-0 count, guys are sitting heater, but they're still going to be able to crush a hanger. And that's kind of what I've seen with Scott, is a few hangers later in outings in the early part of the year was what I saw, where then he just started to leave it up more. And then other times now it's, hey, I can't get away with as much, even if it's a 2-0 count, trying to pitch, you know, backwards, still not going to work unless I hit my spot. So it's just kind of hitting the spots within the zone. I'm not too worried about that, but that's probably the one like bugaboo to watch, I guess, is the long ball. But the good news with him is he doesn't walk guys. So if the long ball is his Achilles heel, okay, it's a solo shot. He recalibrates and he gets the next guy. And I think that's ultimately why he's going to be able to keep runs off the board.
Again, so many of the best pitchers in baseball have a long ball problem, but they are the best pitchers in baseball because they have a solo home run problem and not a 3-run home run problem. Yep. As long as the whip is down, it's a hit. And as long as like there's nobody on base, guess what? It's one earned run. And if you allow 2 homers across 6 innings, they're 2 solo shots, you've got an ERA right at 3.
You know what else is crazy? He's allowed 12 hits total. So 7 of the 12.
7 homers?
Yes.
In how many innings?
25 and a third.
Come on.
So, I mean, that's the other thing too. Is like,
what is the
no whip? One's on base. Like that. That's the wild part, is nobody is on base. So, like, that is why I'm not too worried about it. And I, you could probably see some of these home runs. Maybe they were clipped. And I mean, okay, first home run I click, 92 off the bat from Danny Mendick. The next one's 96 off the bat. So I wonder if even some of these get out the same way at the big league level. We'll see. So, you know, if you look at the home runs too, and several of them being probably cheapies, 96 off the bat, 350 feet, and 92 off the bat, 360 feet, both of which would not have been home runs at Citi Field. You subtract those 2 home runs too, it's even rosier of a picture. And I know you can play that game with a lot of different pitchers and things like that, but I think it's a little bit more valid when we're talking about a guy who's surrendered 12 hits all year long. Opponents are hitting 136 against him. But so it's not like guys are teeing off. And that's why I don't think the long ball thing will be too much of a problem. He's a fly ball pitcher that saw a couple extra balls carry out and, you know, has a tendency to hang them in advantage counts. And I think that's something that he'll be dead set and focused on at the big league level.
Yeah, my favorite hypothetical ace right now is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. If you take out the Korea start, Yamamoto's doing this. Okay, but you can't take out the Korea start. With Scott,
I think if you're going to take out a start, though, that's as valid of a start to take out. Weeks before anybody plays on the other side of the world, like trying to assess a player, I think it's valid to say, hey, I'm not using that game and that data to assess him. And I'm assessing him based on when he started playing games with everybody else and the rest of the season so far. I think that's fair enough.
I can hear the argument. I'm just not a fan of taking starts out in any way. Like, oh,
I agree
about this block.
It's so stupid. He went back to spring training. Like, so if you're going to take one start out, that has to be the most reasonable.
That could be the one. Yeah. Counterpoint, I won't play the game with Scott because I'm not taking a start out because he started when everybody else did. Having said that, at the end of the day, this guy has allowed 7 homers in 25 and a third innings, and he's got a 3.2 ERA and his whip's at 0.71.
Yeah.
Tells you all you got to know. Is it a homer problem? The whip's at 0.7.
That's fine with me. So I'm excited. We'll see what it looks like at the big league level. And I think that X factor for him is the change up in terms of, you know, how dominant can he be? And if it's not there, though, What I love now is he has different ways to get you. Whereas last year, if the changeup wasn't there, it was fastball reliance and hope the slider is playing well that day, but it was so wishy-washy for him. So I think this is a really interesting aspect of how does he throw the changeup at the big league level and go from there. But we'll recap the start when we get a chance, and hopefully we'll get a chance to get him on a little bit later. But this is, I think, exciting times for Mets fans. And you're seeing a pitching development structure now that we have not seen from the Mets. And we actually might as well throw in real quick before we move on to some. You want to stay on pitchers and then we'll wrap with hitters in the second half, or bounce sure. to hitters and then go back to pitchers? All right.
Yeah, we can stay on pitchers.
So we'll go to a Met real quick. Jonah Tong, just got to mention him one more time, made his Triple A debut. I couldn't make it because it was
high A debut.
High A debut. Couldn't make it all the way in Brooklyn at 12 o'clock. But I mean, he just kept doing what he's doing. 5 innings, 2 hits, 1 run that was unearned, 3 walks, 7 Ks. Velo was a little down. He was back. He averaged 91.5 that outing. But it was a 12 o'clock game. And, you know, he threw 84 pitches the last time out. And who knows? Regardless, clearly, it's working for him now in the first start at High A against Aberdeen, which is a pretty decent lineup. It's Tong mania a little bit now. I'm geared up for the next start. Hopefully the next one's at home. I'm going to try to get there.
What level does he finish at
this year?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. I think they're not going to rush him too much. I think High A.
He's 19 years old, right?
20.
He's 20.
I think they keep him in High A for, because I think they're going to stagger, like manage his innings a little bit. My guess is he stays in High A.
I'm going to go out on a limb. 3 starts with Binghamton.
Mm.
So 3 starts in Double A at the end of the year.
I mean, dude, if he's shoving every single start in High A, then yeah, absolutely. He might get more than that. I think there might be a little bit of coming down to earth as hitters maybe adjust some to the fastball usage and things like that. But I mean, clearly there's he's got something working for him, and you know, it's hard to teach that kind of life on a heater and the tunneling effect that he can create there. So I'm gonna try my best to get to his next start out here and try to get that behind home plate angle, because I think you'd really be able to appreciate it from behind home plate, just seeing the way that fastball is just going to be levitating.
Do the first base side thing that you did with Shota too. You sat right behind the dugout on the first base side, and you saw it pretty much like rise.
You could just watch the plane. Yeah, you could just watch gravity not work as well against Shota's pitch. Yeah, that was really cool on the first base side. I'll definitely kind of be moving around and try to get different angles. Another pitcher that should be in the big leagues was briefly, now back in Trips, and I just don't really see why he should care at AAA right now. Oh, he's a professional, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I understand that. But there's a level of how do you lock in. Max Meyer, the Marlins sent him down after legitimately he could not have done much more through his first three big league starts, where the Marlins won two of the three games, which was saying a lot for them up until they swept the Rockies. But also, he was dominant, and this wasn't against garbage lineups either. This was against the Angels with a healthy Mike Trout at that point, the Cardinals, and the Braves. And in his outing against the Braves, I think he had the most swinging strikes at that point in any start by a major league pitcher in the early part of the season. At that point, before they sent him to AAA, 17 innings, 11 hits, 14 strikeouts, 3 walks. I just don't totally get it. And, you know, the Marlins cited wanting to manage his workload coming off a TJ, lower stress environment, blah, blah, blah. So he goes to AAA, first time out, throws 3 innings against Norfolk. It was fine. 2 earned runs, 5 Ks, throws 54 pitches. Next time out against Memphis, 4 innings, gives up 2 home runs, 4 earned, throws 55 pitches, strikes out 2, walks none. You can clearly see that he is trying to throw his changeup way more in AAA. And that's probably the focus in this more controlled environment that doesn't matter. That said, why are we doing this? Because at 25 years old here, where we're seeing how Max Meyer is pitching, and you look at the data now for three straight years, pre post TJ, he's not going to be a guy that gets a lot of whiffs on the fastball. The changeup has improved and looks good. The changeup was phenomenal against the Braves. He could continue to find feel for that pitch at the big league level. I understand wanting to work on those things in a controlled environment, but if you just dominated the best offense or one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball, what do you really need to work on in AAA? Work on that at the big league level. It's not like the Marlins are in a position where, you know, they have a litany of fans. Rodri Munoz, he threw great, but I can promise you so would have Meyer at home against the Rockies. Rodri Munoz shoved the last time out. I think what they're doing to Max Meyer is entirely unfair, and I'm going to get into today's start, which is just it kind of breeds to hypocrisy in the whole situation. And I how much can Meyer really be working on things? Dude, you see guys come back to AAA all the time, and nobody's happy to go back to AAA. They're professionals, and they're going to go out there, and they're going to play, and Max Meyer's playing. But you see and can feel the energy of a player who's sent back to AAA. Now, imagine the energy of a player that was sent back to AAA that didn't deserve it, that had just shoved for three starts. How do you buy in fully on what they want you to do there?
I'm going to go piece by piece through what you just said over the last couple minutes, because you cited all the reasoning that the Marlins could have to send him to AAA. And I'm going to refute each of those reasons. I'm going to give you an alternative option to each of those reasons. In terms of the mentality thing that you just asked me about, like, I mean, I've seen guys come back that OPS'd 580 in the big leagues. I've seen guys come back that had a 9 ERA in the big leagues, and they say, yeah, you know, time to like go back to work. I haven't seen a guy that was the team's war leader, or at least the pitching staff's war leader, that gets optioned because, I don't know, felt like it. First thing you said, want to work on the changeup, right? Changeup's an emphasis. You already made the alternative point. It was good against the Braves. Like, he can do that against the Rockies. He can do that against major league teams. Controlled environment. You know, maybe limit his innings in a controlled environment. There's no more controlled environment than Major League Baseball. Every staffer you can possibly imagine is there. You want Max Meyer getting a massage at 9:37? Guess what? You have a sports masseuse there at 9:37 in a big league clubhouse, and then he gets on a charter flight and he has a steak dinner after the series. Third thing you said, what was it? Lower stress environment?
Stress. That was, I don't know if I fully got into that one, but that's the point that I've seen regurgitated the most, whether it's from the Marlins or from, you know, writers that are defending that.
Can you name a lower stress environment in Major League Baseball right now than Lone Depot Park?
I agree. No one cares on that team right now.
Dude.
It's like very low stress. Yeah. No one's at the game. In fact, on a Friday night, I mean, it's a 1 o'clock game or 12 o'clock game for Jacksonville right now. So no one's at the game as Meyer's pitching. But on a Friday night, there have been several occasions where the Jumbo Shrimp have outdrawn the Marlins. Yeah, it's and I know it's you're not pitching in the big leagues, whatever. Max Meyer, after those three starts, with that team playing the way it's playing, I don't see him having higher stress on the mound for the Marlins than, you know, he would just throwing in AAA. The stress argument to me is I think applicable to guys that are right off the IL, that, you know, you're putting them in positions where the adrenaline's pumping and they're going to push their body a little bit further, you know, especially the postseason, things like that. But I mean, we're talking about April, May in Miami for a team that's one of the worst in Major League Baseball. Spare me the stress conversation there.
Here's one for you. You are, say you're in Philly and then home against the Brewers, right? Just throwing out a hypothetical. I don't think that's how the Marlins schedule lines up whatsoever. If you can push Max Meyer back a day for him not to start in Philly and start at home against the Brewers, just do it. Why not? You can bullpen it. Marlins are bullpenning days all the time. Like, again, there's not many instances where a guy goes back to AAA and somebody not associated with the organization, like you or me, can refute every single claim that you have seen.
Yes.
Like, that does not happen very often, but it's happening here.
Yeah, and it's, oh, he uses his slider. He was throwing his slider more than anybody in Major League Baseball. Okay, his slider is also better than 98% of pitchers in Major League Baseball. Starters, for sure. Yeah. And on top of that, it wasn't like it was egregious. It was like 39% usage. And you have guys like Dylan Cease and Chris Sale and whatever, all in the mid-30s, low to mid-30s. Like, it's not that big of a difference. And at the end of the day, his fastball is not as good as a lot of other starters, and his changeup's getting better. He needs to throw his slider a lot. He's not an ace. You know, he's not a guy that's going to be a frontline starter. He's a guy that's going to be a number three, number four type, give you flashes and more. But he's going to need to lean on a slider very heavily. That's who he is. That's what he's going to be, whether you send him to AAA to pretend to work on things or not. And the last thing I'm going to say on this is, you know, today, as we're recording this, he throws three innings, threw 74 pitches. He could do that at the big league level. 32 pitch second inning. Yeah, okay, he wasn't that stressed about it while guys were getting on base and whatever. And people might say, oh, well, if he's giving up runs in AAA, well, what would he be doing in the big leagues? I don't know. He just shoved three straight games to the big leagues. Like, I think he's back in AAA, just throwing changeups more than ever, working on some stuff and, you know, not ripping sliders and not, you know, as locked in and wanting to, you know, I think, turn over the lineup and get outs. And sure, so you could say, oh, that's a more relaxed Meyer. Sure. I would rather have him be a little bit higher energy, maybe a little bit more stressed, and throw 75 pitches that matter, or at least matter a little bit more, with his service time clicking and actually making, you know, big league salary, than throwing 32 pitches in the second inning of a 1 p.m. game in AAA for no reason. That's to me like, okay, great. You preserved his workload. You just had this most stressful inning of the year, by the way, in AAA. Whether he's physically or physiologically stressed or not, through 32 pitches in the middle of the heat in one inning. So, I mean, good job, Marlins. You preserved his workload. He belongs in the big leagues. And, you know, anytime I see a guy just, you know, get that opportunity taken away from them, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, and professionalism needs to be through the roof, and it seems like he's a very professional person, and that is a testament to Max Meyer, because I know there are a lot of people in that situation that would be throwing a hissy fit and haven't seen anything from him that even looks remotely to a hissy fit.
No, not at all. He was just took it and went, and he's out there throwing and doing what they asked. But, you know, it is a little disappointing. What has been exciting to see, and a guy that could end up getting back up, and the second that he can help them, he will be, because it's a serious organization. AJ Smith-Shawver, the Atlanta Braves. I don't know if they need him anytime soon. We were talking about on the Just Baseball show, but you also know how baseball unfortunately works, and you'll need a pitcher at some point over 162. We were getting a little, I won't speak for you, but I usually kind of know where you're at. I was getting a little bit, I wouldn't say like long-term concerned, but like short-term concerned in the sense that, oh, this might be a bit more of a process than I thought with AJ Smith-Shawver, in terms of gets up to the big leagues, obviously hits a bit of the wall, then they send him back to AAA. It just was kind of not great there either. And back up to the big leagues for a start, didn't look great. Like, it just seemed like he wasn't quite ever having that moment where it's like, oh, there he is again. Like, the flashes were even becoming fewer and far between. And it just seemed like he was fighting himself. And then all of a sudden, the last three starts, you've seen the AJ Smith-Shawver that we saw fly through the minor leagues and get to the show last year before hitting a bit of a wall. Last three outings, 14 and two-thirds, 15 strikeouts. He's only allowed 9 hits. 5 walks is, I think, the important part as well, a 2.45 ERA.
Yeah.
It seems like he's just kind of found that delivery again. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's found a little bit more confidence in the zone.
So if I'm being totally honest, like, I thought when Strider went down, they were maybe going to all hands on deck it. And AJ would be a multi-inning reliever for them in the major league level. And Waldrop wouldn't be far off. And he would be a multi-inning reliever for them, maybe by the all-star break at the major league level. Because when you have an ace go down, when you are one of, if not the World Series favorite as it stands right now, and as it stood at time of injury, like, if I were in Brian Snicker's shoes, if I were in Alex Anthopoulos' shoes, that thought would cross my mind right away. Hey, we've got two guys with great stuff that are really young that could probably get outs across two innings in the fifth and sixth, or in the sixth and seventh. And I like that they held off of that. And they might have held off because Reynaldo Lopez has been throwing out of his mind to open the year. They might have held off because Elder looked good enough in AAA, and he's looked good in his first couple of starts back in the big leagues this year. They have built such a well-oiled machine in Atlanta to the point where they didn't need the situation to dictate what happened with AJ Smith-Shawver. And I think once that was clear, AJ might have actually gotten more comfortable, and that's when he took off. Note, as soon as he takes off, or like the moment that he takes off is when it seems like they really have a cut and dry plan for the absence of Spencer Strider. So I think that guy might honestly just be thinking more simply and say, all right, like I control my own destiny here. I'm not a situationally based guy. Let's take that external pressure off and it's all internal. I can handle the internal. He's a young guy, man. He's what? He's 21 years old.
Yeah, he's in like a young 21. He's closer to 21 than 22.
Come on.
It's been a unique situation, and we've talked about that plenty. You know, the Von Grissom adjacent situation there. But, you know, he looks like he's just throwing more free too. And the fastball has just been bumping. He touched 100 last time out in the first inning. And by the way, nice to see Jonathan Aranda back in, you know, in the rehab situation here. He was opposite of Smith-Shawver a couple days ago. But it's just been nice to see him throwing the way that we're used to see him throw, which is loose, athletic, and starting to fill the zone back up again. And the thing that we were talking about that we were like, oh, wow, you know, during spring training was that splitter and just the where he had gotten that pitch. Like, okay, that's a big X factor now. Like that could really put him over the top. And that's honestly what's been getting him through these last three starts at a much better clip is the fastball command and then the splitter. The slider continues to be evasive for him, which is fascinating because, you know, it wasn't as much last year. But even in this nice three-start stretch, Jack, a 46% strike rate on the slider. So that tells me, too, like there's more in there. Like there's a better Smith-Shawver still as he gets there with the slider. But the fact that this change, I mean, 72% strike rate on that pitch now, and he's throwing it the same amount as the slider and the fastball, you know, hitting his spots and just overpowering guys with it so far over these last three starts, seems like he can really succeed without having all three. So if that slider comes back along and, you know, he'll mix in that curveball here and there, we're going to see, I think, a much more complete Smith-Shawver that I think hopefully he can start to find that in the next couple starts. But it's been nice to just see that fastball command, the splitter be there, and just the confidence, I think, that he's starting to regain there on the bump.
Well, and we'll see more of a starting pitcher look than we've seen in quite some time from him, and like maybe ever. Because even when he got up last year, he was a two-pitch guy, right? Like he was, he could be a lights-out reliever. That was the conversation about AJ. And frankly, coming into this year, it was the conversation about AJ too. But now, yeah, I'm with you, man. It's starting to like really feel like he could turn into a complete starting pitcher. And it's crazy that the maturation happens after an option, after you spend like 2 months in the major leagues.
Yeah. And that's it's if you're a Braves prospect, it's always going to be an interesting path. And you know, if you're showing good things, you're going to open yourself up to opportunity, but also a very unique path of progression. And I should say, like a little bit of a clarification too on Smith-Shawver, the slider over the final 10 starts for him last year started to really go wayward also. So that seems to be the trend here, and that seems to be the thing to watch. So if that the splitter, because he threw a changeup like 6% of the time last year, so the splitter being there now and being there to the point that it is takes a lot of pressure off of that slider. But at the same time, now if that slider comes along, this will be a different AJ Smith-Shawver than we saw from even the good parts of last year. He could be elevated on even a different level,
for sure.
I wanted to talk one more Brave real quick that's on a nice little stretch as well over his last three starts, and that's Hurston Waldrop. And we're still assuming that we'll see Waldrop at some point this year, just because he seems like a guy that could definitely slot into the bullpen. But so far, or at least in these last three starts, after a really, really bad first start to the year, gave up 7 earned runs, 11 hits and 2 2/3 at Pensacola, followed that up with 4 innings and a third of 3 runs, 4 walks. And then the last three, he's thrown 17 and 2/3 innings, 15 strikeouts, just 6 walks. Interestingly, 4 of those walks came in one outing. So we have 2 outings now with one or less walk, or just one walk. Pensacola went 5 2/3, one run unearned, one walk, five Ks. That was the last time out. And then six innings of four walks, one run ball against Montgomery. And then before that, six innings of one run, one walk, five Ks. So we're seeing him, I think, start to settle back in and find that command a little bit more. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to use him this year, but it's just nice to see after that really shaky start, Waldrop is starting to settle in now at the double A level. And I'm very fascinated to find out how the Braves plan to use him.
How do you think they use him?
I think Smith Shawver's obviously the better option as a starter. I think Waldrop, they're probably realizing now, maybe needs to be more of a guy that gets that run as a starter in the minors and truly just gets the opportunity to pitch every fifth day and develop, maybe more than, hey, this is a fast track guy. But if they do decide to fast track him, I do think that he could work as a reliever. It's just the command might not just not be there enough in a big league setting right now. I don't know if he can handle that at this point. So I think they may go more traditional with him and may just have a more classic progression with him.
So alternative, could they throw some traffic cones in front of him? Could they swing man him in double A? Could they swing man him a little bit in triple A where, hey, you start on Tuesday, you go three innings, and then you come out of the bullpen for two innings on Friday? Like, I could see them trying to not screw with him, but I could see them trying to see him in a bunch of different situations at the minor league level to see what they've got.
Maybe I think as he starts to, if he turns out more quality starts or just solid starts every fifth day for the next month or two, then maybe. But I think they're probably going to want to see him do this a few more times. They've been consistently having him go 80 plus pitches. But I'm with you. Like once he settles in and shows, hey, I can have a decent feel for three pitches, I'm filling up the zone enough, I can go five, six innings, then maybe they start to shift him back to the, all right, well, we want you out here sooner rather than later. So can you kind of start to adapt and thrive in these different roles? I'd imagine that happens once he gets to AAA, though. And I know he made the one start in AAA last year, but I think that's where they might start to utilize him in these different roles.
AA was the right spot for him to start this year, especially like with what I'm seeing with the ABS. I kind of went scorched earth on the ABS last night because Cam Aldred, really nice guy, like never gets frustrated, was very frustrated after walking a guy when he painted like four straight pitches on the outside corner. And I just like, I mean, last year, nothing at the top of the zone. Elevated fastball guys were never getting called strikes and they were walking 5.5, 6/9. Now it's an east-west thing. Like for some reason, one of the corners is, and we talked with Walker Buehler on the Just Baseball Show about it. He feels like it might be skewed a little bit where it's like you get a little bit off one corner and you don't get the other corner. Like it just feels so bad right now. And I'm glad that Waldrop started in double so he doesn't have to deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want a guy with command issues trying to find it. Also have to battle something else other than himself because that's just the last thing you need. And I do think that ultimately we will see him up there sooner rather than later, but I think it'll be a few more starts in double A. One more arm to talk about real quick. Also in double A, Tink Hentz. I just wanted to mention his start because of how good it was last time out. That was on the 30th. He went seven innings, two hit ball against Tulsa, one run, two walks, 10 Ks. This was the Tink Hentz that we saw quickly climb and be one of the most exciting pitching prospects in baseball. I cut up all the highlights and put it out on Twitter a few days ago. Go check it out. It is nasty stuff. The fastball was jumping. And you can almost tell when Tink Hentz is really feeling good because that athletic delivery, the way the ball explodes out of his hand, it's just a little bit different some days than others. And that's the interesting thing to monitor. He averaged 95.5 in this start, whereas the start before he averaged 92. So it's just interesting to see the velo fluctuations. Before that, though, 94, 95. But this was the highest average fastball velocity we've seen. And he also threw 94 pitches, Jack, which is the other really exciting part about it. Beyond that, it was the command. The way that he was able to kind of go to whatever he wanted when he wanted to and freezing hitters at the knees with the fastball, getting them to soar to pitches at the top of the zone, mixing in the curveball, mixing in some good changeups. It was really just an aesthetically pleasing start. And it just seemed like he was totally bullying these hitters all day long. I was floored with Tinkins. Ran it up to 98 several times as well.
Small, lean dude that is going to lock guys up knee high with the heater and get swings and misses at neck high heaters. Like he's so electric when he's on, when he's right. And 94 pitches, man, like our baby's all grown up.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing about Tank Hansen. We've been begging for him to get stretched out. When he got stretched out in Double A last year, it didn't go so well. This was like the longest good outing of his career. And it's like, finally, man, thank you for showing us what we can hope for. Thank you for showing Cardinals fans who have to be punching air every night what they can look forward to very soon. He is the saving grace of this organization right now. And I thought Walker was going to be that guy. Jordan Walker has time to, you know, build back up in Memphis. Mason Wynn looks the part, but at the end of the day, pitching has been the bugaboo. Did you see the homer that Miles Michaelis allowed in Detroit the other day?
No.
Dude, it was like if I was pitching. It was crazy. It looked so uncompetitive from him on the mound. If they can go from the Miles Michaelis, Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn type rotation to a rotation that features Tink Hentz, I mean, that's a shot in the ass for Cardinals fans around the world.
Absolutely. And just to make you feel even better, I'm pretty sure the last pitch he threw, 96.2.
Okay. If you're maintaining that velocity on your 94th pitch, that means you have it right now.
Austin Beck grounded into a double play at that point to end the game.
Former crazy sixth overall pick or fifth?
Six, I believe.
Oakland.
He's in the Dodgers double A, or now he's double A with the Dodgers now.
He's a driller.
940 OPS. We're gonna ignore the 37% K rate. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, dude.
But yeah, that was a name to see. When I was watching through that start, I was like, whoa, oh, he's there? I was watching low A, and unless there's another Robert Poisson, he's might be in low A with somebody right now.
No, that's Robert Poisson. I'll tell you where he is right now.
Okay, well, he's in low A with somebody right now. Who was I watching when I just saw? I just saw him.
He's in Stockton. He still is. He's still in the A's org. He's a Stockton port, and through 16 games, he's got a 4.11 OPS.
Yeah, but he has three hits in his last two games. You don't want to share all the facts.
Oh, he's getting hot.
Man, another guy rooting for him. But yeah, so it was really cool to see Hentz do that. And the slider just working, mixing in that curveball as well. And I mean, there was just a level of confidence. And that's why I like encourage you to go check out the highlights. I love the way he was strutting on the mound. It was just this energy and rhythm that was palpable. We're going to talk about some hitters who have really been showing out in a moment. But before that, a quick break.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we got a few AAA mashers who, we could talk about them all the time, but Junior Caminero right now, what he did the other day was insane. I put out the videos of the two different home runs. By the way, he has four home runs in his last three games as we're recording this, and also has 7 hits in his last 3 games. And also the Rays suck, so they should probably call him up. But just another one that's just so aggravating and agitating. All of the ings that, you know, that you can thesaurus up. Just get this guy up there. He deserves to be collecting big league checks right now. I don't care if he's sucking up there. He deserves to be collecting big league checks right now, especially when you look at the what they're not doing at the big league level. I know you got to kind of shoehorn him in there in terms of figuring out the lineup construction. You figure it out for a guy like Junior Caminero, a guy that you called up last year to help you make a playoff run from Double A because he's so good, but now he isn't good enough to help your underperforming team at the big league level. I know he's been hurt, and I think that's the one thing I said. I'll give him a week to say, hey, we want him to get his legs back under him. This is an example of where, okay, the adrenaline could push the body maybe a little bit further than it needs to be, right? A ground ball. He's at the big league level. He wants to run it out. He pushes his body a little bit too much and tweaks something again. I can understand maybe wanting to build him up game setting wise another week. But if he is not in Tampa on May 15th, May 14th, even, I'm going to start to get really annoying about it because it is just, it's just silly because it's not just what he's doing, Jack. I showed you when we were on Zoom, when I screen shared and on, it was like, look at the location of this swing. He hit 2 balls out that were home runs that were not strikes. One was up and out by a lot. And then the other was down and in by a decent bit. Which was more impressive to you?
Up and out going the other way, because that's something that like very, very few people can do. Typically like, and it sounds backwards, but typically when I see somebody make hard contact and a pitch that up and that far out of the zone, it goes dead center because for some reason they like beat it with the barrel and they somehow got their barrel flat enough to like hit it and
just
like
tomahawk it
to dead center. Yeah. It's like, okay, you tomahawk it and you flail and somehow it ends up going back up the gut. For him to hit a home run to the opposite field, like he hit some rockets to right, like down the right field line. I'm not talking right center, down the right field line that make no sense for anybody else except him. And it's natural. It's all natural, God-given ability, innate feel for where the barrel is. Like no hitting coach in the world teaches you how to get to that ball. That's something you're born with. And he's got abilities that like very, very few people, if not anybody else in minor league baseball has.
No, let's be honest. It was a bad swing decision.
It was a bad swing.
It's a bad swing decision. It was a horrible swing decision. To be honest, it wasn't even close. That's the thing with a guy like Junior Caminero. Maybe there isn't really a bad swing decision. It's the Rafi Devers conversation. It's the Samuel Basayo conversation that we're saying. Sure, technically, it's not the best swing decision. But if this guy has a chance to take that pitch out and it's a 1-2 count, which is what it was, go ahead. And that's exactly what he just did. He saw a pitch and he said, hey, I think I can get to this thing, and didn't want to see another one. And instead it's a 103 mile an hour home run at 25 degrees somehow on that pitch. That one was crazy, but then he gets a cutter from Ray Kerr at 90 miles an hour. That was also a ball down and in, and golfs it out at 110. And by the way, we were just talking about how good AJ Smith-Shawver's been. One of the only really hard hit balls in that ball game was 114 and a half off the bat of Junior Caminero against AJ Smith-Shawver. This is just special ability to hit also with elite power that, I mean, can change a lineup for you. And I thought those two swings just encapsulated it as well as ever. And most notably, he played both games of a doubleheader. So if he's playing both games of a doubleheader at this point, he's probably ready to go.
If we want to talk about it like a rehab assignment, that means he's more than ready to go.
Yeah, it means it's not a rehab assignment, right? Like it means it's no longer that, and it's really just let's keep him down there as long as we can. And I think they're in this little tweener mode too here where – the American League Rookie of the Year situation is somewhat wide open, right? I mean, there's no one that's really running away with it as far as I know. And there's still enough time for Junior Caminero to get up there and go nuts. And if I'm not mistaken, with the PPI, the time has passed for the Rays to reap any rewards of that if he finishes in the top 2 in Rookie of the Year voting. But if he finishes in the top 2 of Rookie of the Year voting for himself, I think he earns that full year of service time. So for the Rays at this point, if I'm not mistaken, and someone please correct me in the YouTube comments, I might be wrong. The PPI thing is like one of the least disclosed aspects of the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah.
I'd imagine if you finish in the top two in rookie of the year, I know for sure that the team doesn't get a pick. I'd imagine that Caminero would still get rewarded with a full year of service time. So the team at this point,
I know that
PPI, but this is the one little gap where it now becomes disincentivized. The Rays become disincentivized to call him up anytime before the end of May, because they want him to be way behind in this race at this point.
Right. I do know that for sure. If he finishes one or two in rookie of the year voting, regardless of when he comes up, he gets the full year of service. So that
That answers it.
Yeah, that answers it. I was looking at the rookie of the year race too. Couser and Willier Abreu are probably one and two right now in the AL rookie of the year race. It's not like they're Shota Imanaga, like especially Willier Abreu. Couser, I think Couser should be the odds on favorite to win rookie of the year right now in the American League. But
he's also whipping plenty. Like there's an easy chance he slows down, and they've got so many replacements just waiting the second he slumps.
Right. That's the thing. Like, I just, with the National League side, it feels like Imanaga and Jared Jones have really established themselves moving forward.
And then you still have Yamamoto who's going to get on.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, hey, we're going to have a three-horse race there and all three are going to be pitchers. On the American League side, you can't convince me that Junior Caminero can't catch up to Couser and Willier Abreu. You just can't.
And, you know, of course, you got Carter and Langford, and those guys are going to get hot and I think do well too, but they'll be in a similar position to Caminero at this point. So that's why I feel like we might see it take a little bit longer. And I also think that's why we might finally see the Nationals say, all right, I think Wood's far behind enough. Let's get him up there. And we might see James Wood sooner rather than later. I got a question for you. Who do we see first, James Wood or Junior Caminero?
Caminero, I hope it comes this weekend. It might come Monday or Tuesday. Wood, I think you can possibly convince yourself that he needs more maturation at the AAA level. Caminero, there's nothing to prove, and he's already been there. And like the Nats have no reason to rush Wood. They have no reason to keep him down, but they have no reason to rush him either. Like they're just kind of holding serve where they are. The Rays are like down 40 love, and like they need to fight back in it. It's not like they're in a semifinal match at a Grand Slam. Like the Nats are playing Djokovic in round one, and they were an invite. If that makes any sense, like
that does.
Tennis.
Whatever. That's a crazy analogy, but I get it.
But like, okay, you get it. Let me try and put it in a better way, like in just common ass English for everybody else that might not get it. What I'm saying is the Nats have no postseason aspirations this year. So they should feel no situational pressure to go and grab a guy that's performing in AAA. You just keep running out the lineup that you have. And like when you feel like that prize prospect in AAA is good, then you go grab him. With the Rays, they're looking for a jolt. The Nats don't need a jolt in the grand scheme of the 2024 season. The Rays at this point need a jolt in the grand scheme of the 2024 season. And that is why I think they go to Caminero in the next 72 hours. There you go.
I love it. Okay. I like it. I hope you're right too. And that would be very, very fun because it's at the point now where it's like, we need some of that. If he's that hot right now, let's just get him up here now, right now. It would be fun to see. It would have been nice to see a Christian Scott matchup with Caminero, but maybe another time. Yeah. One other hitter that we have actually two more. Both of them. When are we going to see them up? Another hypothetical, but I think this one's a little bit easier. Who do we see first? Kyle Manzardo or Coby Mayo?
Manzardo. No question in my mind. Manzardo.
Yeah. So we'll start with Manzardo. Manzardo. I mean, you look at the Guardians are playing great ball, and I think Guardians fans are definitely clamoring. I'm starting to see it as much as ever to get him up there. And we've talked about you can definitely find an opportunity for him if you shuffle things around the right way, because he's going to provide. And we dove into that on the imminent call up episode. I just more want to talk about what he's done lately, which is just demolish baseballs. Last four games. 7 hits, 3 home runs, 4 doubles, 2 walks, no strikeouts. The hell is that? That's insane.
That's a guy that wants to be a Guardian.
It's a guy who deserves to be a Guardian.
Correct. That was a bar.
I mean, so far this year, in zone contact rate of 90%, chase rate of 22%, 90th percentile of 106.
So can I tell you,
that's the prettiest picture you can paint.
Can I tell you that fully convinces me that any struggles last year, I'm attributing to health for Manzardo. Like, this is who he was in 2022. This was the guy that was like a top 50 prospect in the game going into last year. And it was a steep price to pay for Savali, man. I'm sure the Rays didn't want to give him up. And did Manzardo have a spot? I don't know. But like, in hindsight, would you rather move a Ronda or Manzardo at the end of the day? Like, Manzardo looks like one of the best pure hitters in the minor leagues.
Yeah. And I think that it probably would have, it might have been one of those situations where the Guardians are like, it's Manzardo or nobody, you know, or somebody that you definitely aren't giving up, like Carson Williams or whatever, right, because of the control. But I'm with you. Like, I think the Rays may be thinking about that one a little bit. And I agree. He looks exactly like the guy that we saw in 22. But the difference was, at that point, people were saying, oh, but look at the EVs. You know,
yeah, he wasn't hitting the ball that hard.
It was 102, 103 mile per hour, 90th. So I agree. I think injuries were a big part of it. I do think a subtle part of it was like trying to be that power guy. And then trying to do that while not being 100% healthy is also difficult. But yep. I think trying to lean into that power guy a little bit more and then getting away from the guy that's one of the best pure hitters, as you just said, in the minor leagues. So I think realizing, like, I still got to be that guy and the power is going to come. And we're seeing it now. He also got BABIPs pretty good last year. He did 260 BABIP last year.
Ew.
Just nuts. Nuts. So he's hitting the ball harder than ever. So I think that's also tied in with the health and then also probably just put on some strength. But then now you're seeing the final form of the hit tool as well. That is really hard to argue against. When you have that kind of feel to hit while elevating, usually guys that, you know, are putting up 90% in zone contact rates, it's going to be a lot of ground balls. That swing's going to be flatter. You're just going to be more contact oriented. But instead, you have a guy that's elevating and then also making a ton of contact. And what else could you really want to see from a hitter? And I think for the Guardians, yeah, they're playing great right now. So it's not like an urgent thing, but why not play a little better?
Yeah.
I think he's going to help you do that. And even lefties, dude. So far this year, it's small sample, but he's 7-for-23 against lefties. It's crazy. Yeah.
That can play.
Coby Mayo. You think he's the hottest hitter on the planet right now?
Yeah, I think that Mayo is going to be down for way too long, and I think that Coby Mayo is going to be your just baseball minor league hitter of the year.
I think that's a good call, unfortunately. And this isn't like anybody's fault type situation. You know, this one you can't really fault the Orioles for.
Yeah.
Other than just having too much talent. Last 10 games, he's hitting 350, 447, 750. It's an 1197 OPS. I mean, four home runs, all of which, by the way, are consecutive. Four straight games with a bomb. And he's walked seven times, struck out 11. The dude is just locked in. And there was a little bit of swing and miss early in the year. And by a little bit, I mean a little bit more than what we're used to.
Yeah.
A lot of it. So I'd say a little bit more than what we're used to with him.
Yeah.
But then just seemed like he settled right in. Last 25 games, he's punching at a 25% clip. And that's more of what we're used to. Last 10 games, that drops even more.
And note at the beginning of the year when there was a lot of bit of swing and miss and a little bit more than you are typically accustomed to with Mayo, everybody in that Norfolk lineup was going ballistic and he was going ballistic, but his outs were strikeouts. So like he was still going off. Now the outs just aren't Ks.
Yes.
He's been the most enjoyable watch in terms of hitters in the minor league so far this year. Cause like nobody's been as enjoyable as Skeens, I'd say, and Tugboat, but like in terms of hitters, it was Kerstad for those, what, week and a half, 2 weeks. And then it's Coby Mayo now. And the fact that you could turn on the game and see both of them at the same time was awesome. Mayo is physically imposing. He's offensively dominant and defensively, dude, he's not a finished product by any stretch, but he can absolutely hold his own at third base.
It's getting better and better. And it's just cool to see. I mean, he talked about it on the show with us, just how hard he's been working on it. And a guy like that, I've seen it so many times in professional ball. It's easy to just not lean into the defense side because you know that you're going to hit your way to the show. But just to see how much work he's put in at third and see it, you can see it in real time, like how much he has improved. It really does shore up that Riley, that Austin Riley comp all the way. Seeing the way that Riley's defense has improved and the offensive side of things, like it really is an uncanny comp in a lot of ways. As much as I don't like comps, that one just, it really does line up. And the thing is he's doing it at an even younger age. He's 22. So that defense, like he's not going to get any heavier. He's not going to lose any more agility, I don't think, in the next few years.
No, maybe he looks like a grown-ass man already.
He was the most jarring, I think, to me when we were at the spring breakout. Was he not the most – him and Tavera was huge. But
Tavera was huge. Basayo's a big boy, man.
I know, but I kind of like – he looked like I thought he'd look.
Okay, you know
Mayo
what?
Was even – that's just me. And yeah. We have our own preconceived notions. But for me, Mayo was way bigger than I had even thought. And I think I've seen him play, but it was just something about where we were right there by the dugout. And I was like,
yeah,
whoa, he's way. And seeing him next to Basayo and next to all these other guys is way bigger than I thought.
So I think for me, seeing just how filled out and, you know, trimmed Xavier Isaac was at this point, like yeah. I always kind of pictured him as like, oh, he's got some baby fat on him. Like, no, that dude's just like huge now, huge in a good way, huge in like a you are built like a middle linebacker that happens to be 6'4", like Kyle Hamilton. It feels like if Kyle Hamilton threw on a baseball jersey.
I love that. No, I mean, that was another guy, just seeing how athletic he looks now compared to what he looked like when he was drafted.
Yeah,
it's just night and day. I'll give you the last question is, how and when could we see Mayo at the big league level?
How, injury, when, I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully not. Like, I don't want anyone to get
hopefully
hurt.
Hopefully not. So. Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, I think it is a direct line between Westberg's performance and Mayo's.
Who's been one of the best hitters in baseball.
Westberg's kicking ass right now. I don't see a world where you can relegate Westberg to a utility role, because that's what would happen if Mayo came up. I don't know, maybe you have an injury to one of your DH guys and Mayo can come up in DH, but even then, like, you got cursed that up at this point. Like, you don't want him to be short end of the platoon DH or third base. Like, come on now.
Maybe at the end of the season, that's where I could see, like, at
September
that point,
call up.
Yeah. And have him be like a left-handed pinch hitter, like against left-handed pitching, and you have the best bench of all time, I guess.
Yeah.
From a talent perspective, like
Kerstad to Mayo to whoever, you can get Holiday up to and go all hands on deck.
It's just absurd. Holiday, by the way, to wrap up, 0 for his last six.
Yeah, but walked like a billion times.
He walked 5 times in the last 2 games, 4 walks in his last ball game.
Yeah.
The thing that's interesting to me though is I feel like a lot of those walks are, I mean, some are just him not seeing much to hit. Others are like, you know, fouling off, eventually works the walk. So I still see that like recalibration going on right now. And it's going to he's going to get recalibrated, but you're seeing him kind of go through that right now. He has had some funky matchups too, like Aaron Ashby and some left on left stuff like that. But it seems like he's already kind of settled back in. He had a 3-hit day the day before that. I'm interested to keep watching and just seeing what he's working on there and see, you know, if there's anything different and what his focuses are, because, you know, you don't want to get away from who you've always been, but there's clearly some things that he needs to walk in on and adjust. So trying to toe that line is always interesting. And we'll keep tabs on Holiday as he continues to get opportunity up there, but I should say down there, unfortunately.
Yeah,
that'll do it for this episode. We will hopefully have an interview with somebody for next week, but we also will have the Mariners top prospects done as well. That's just about done, but we didn't want to rush it into the end of this week. So we're going to have it out next week for you. That's going to be a ton of fun because that is a very talented top part of the farm system as well. And so many names that I'm eager to talk about, from the Ty Peets, the Farmellos, and everybody in between. Reminder, you can subscribe to the bonus episodes of The Call-Up with the link in the episode description. Check out this coming week's short form YouTube content. Again, thank you for all the feedback. It was so cool to see all the comments on that. People enjoying that. This week in minor league baseball recap, we're going to make it a couple minutes shorter this time around. I'm hoping to be in the 8 and 10 minute range, and that'll go out on Monday evening. So keep an eye out for that on The Call-Up's YouTube. But that'll do it. Hope you have a great weekend. Look forward to talking prospects with you on Monday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.